And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So, JJ, this is a tribute show, and I know you're very modest, but I have to start with this quote from Brian Cody. JJ Delaney is the best defender I have ever seen. Like, I mean, when you read that, where were you when you read it? And what did you think?
Yeah, it's just something that I never thought to hear him saying, reading, to be honest with you, because he's very... it's a team game, so he's very reluctant to kind of give individual praise, which is fair enough. There's no issues regarding that, but I think it's a cute move. It was around the 2006 All-Ireland final. We were doing a press night before the All-Ireland final as well, and Brian asked me to do it, but I was injured. I wasn't going to be playing. So I said, yeah, I do it, because I'll take a bit of pressure off one of the players that might want to do it, because some players wouldn't want to do it coming up to the final just in case what would happen, that kind of way. But he said it that way that night, and I seen it in the paper the next day. I kind of, he wouldn't say it, and he didn't mean, but I think it was the greatest stroke he ever pulled, because there was no pressure, no one talking about Kilkenny coming up to that game either, and he was just talking about, everyone was talking about his quote, but he spoke about a player that wasn't going to be playing on the All-Ireland final day that day as well. So I thought it was a massive stroke by Brian as well. Like, you know what I mean? You're saying that he's thinking of the game, and he was took pressure off anyone that was playing as well, because he was always talking about who was me when I wasn't going to be playing anyway, the kind of way. So I thought it was a master stroke album as well, to be fair.
Right.
No one really kind of called it at the time. I'd say everyone was probably so shocked that he kind of gave an individual a bit of praise. But if you think about it, then it was the one player that wasn't going to be playing that on that particular Sunday. That kind of way. So I thought it was a master stroke, to be honest.
Well, yeah, maybe. I thought he said this about you when you retired. I didn't realise he said it when you were injured.
06, yeah, coming up to the final in 06. And it just took the pressure off the rest of the team, that kind of way, which I had no problem doing, that kind of way, if you want to say something like that.
You had only, like, you'd 5 years playing for him at that stage.
Yeah, it would have been 2001, up to 2006 then as well. So, look, I've been around the block there a few years at that particular stage, that kind of way. So, obviously, someone must have asked him about the injury and all that kind of stuff, and maybe he said it. Look, I don't know if it's calculated or not, but it took a lot of pressure and took up a lot of media columns there coming up to the match, which is grand, because, look, I wasn't going to be playing, so it was fine talking about me, because there's no issue that way whatsoever,
Right. So the best defender he's ever seen, and I was looking at your Laker Gael, and you were saying you didn't think you'd make the minors. Now, are you being modest there again?
No, I didn't, because I didn't make the under 14. I didn't make the under 16s. I wasn't playing in Kieran's College either. I was playing out in my the secondary school out in Clashtabury in Johnstown. I was playing on that. Look, if you're not inside in Kieran's, you're not really in the shop window, for argument's sake. The kind of way. Right. So, no, I didn't make the under 16s, but I made the minor when I was 17. But I wasn't something in my head. No, I had to make it. I had to do this. Look, I was kind of tipping away. I was enjoying my hurling as well at that particular time. But look, I was lucky enough to make the minors for a couple of years. But no, I wasn't being modest. I didn't think it was, to be honest with you. I didn't think it was at that level, because you're in Kilkenny back then. You're playing North Kilkenny, then you've made the whole Kilkenny team. You're playing that on that team until Kieran's are knocked out or win their All-Ireland Championship. So when them Kieran's has come back, there are probably 8, 10, 12, 14 of them could be on the panel. The kind of way. So you're not fully sure you're on the panel until Kieran's has come back. When you do and you make it, you're happy enough then after that,
Right, and was Kieran's too much of a drive for you, or did you not try to say, here, I need to go to this bloody school?
I know, it was either get up at 8:30 and go into school at 8:50, or else get the bus at 8 o'clock into Kilkenny. So, no, I said, right, I like me sleep too much. I didn't like me hurling over me sleep.
Well, that's a good one. So, I was reading that in and around that time you were playing wing forward or corner forward for Fenians, and you'd be dropping back as an extra defender.
Look, I suppose it kind of drifted back. I know it's myself, really. Like any other young player coming up with our senior team, you've tried in the forwards first because you're obviously more valuable up in the forwards, that kind of way. So I done a year up there, but no, the year after that, now I kind of brought back wing back and corner back after that. So I kind of drifted around a few different positions, but I suppose I know it's myself. I was kind of going back to where I was comfortable, really, more than anything. But look, I was a forward up to when I was probably 13, 14 years of age. I never played in the backs at all. It's actually a funny story how I got started in the backs was that I was walking downtown and the Phoenix were playing a minor league game. And I was only 14. I wasn't even talking out. I was walking down. We were stuck for numbers. So I was walking down the town and they asked me, would I play? I said, Brandon, no bother at all. I'll just fill a position because they were stuck for 15 at the time. And I thought I was going to play in corner forward because I was playing forwards all my life up to under 14 years of age, you know. So they put me back in cornerback and I played the whole season minor that year cornerback and I never looked back since, you know. The kind of way. It was funny enough, if I hadn't walked down that town that day, I could have still be a forward, you know. The kind of way.
Could still be a forward. Because your two uncles, obviously Billy Fitzpatrick and Pat Delaney, who won loads of All-Irelands themselves, they were both forwards, right? So like, I mean, presume that you wanted to be like them.
Ah, you would be, yeah. And when I was growing up, PJ Delaney, first cousin of mine, with Pat's son, he hurled in a 93 All-Ireland team with Kilkenny, and he got 1, 2, or 3 that particular day. So yeah, look, that was the probably game I watched most when I was a young lad as well. So obviously, no one wants to be the cornerback there that hitting the ball 20 yards out the field. You want to be the forward that's scoring the 1, 2, 1, 3 and winning the game for the team, you know.
Yeah, so that's it. So, like, I mean, according to your Wikipedia, you can confirm this or deny it. You only scored 1 point in your whole championship career.
And that might tell you, I wasn't going to make it as a forward buddy either. Yeah, but I scored a point against Offaly in Amore Park. And on the same day, if there was Hawkeye in Amore Park, I might have got that point, to be honest with you, you know. But no, I see my job is hitting the ball up the forward. Looking at forwards of Greg Henry and Eddie, say Richie Power, Gorton, all these guys, get the ball into them. They're that's what they're there for, you know what I mean? But yeah, I hit the post in the Ireland final in 2008, all right, but I don't know, do you count that? Is that an on target or not? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I wonder how many shots you took to get this 1 point.
Yeah, well, a few of them, but I learned my lesson, I think it was 2009, 2010, maybe. We played Dublin in Craw Park and I wandered up the field in a solo run. I pulled my hamstring at the 21, so after that then I never ventured up the field again.
But I suppose, like, I mean, when did your mindset change into just pure defending, you know? Because, like, I mean, if you played in the forwards when you're young, everyone kind of dreams of scoring a point, you know, the night before a big game. When did your mind change to thinking about hooks and blocks and, you know, stuff like that?
Yeah, my instinct was never really to go forward, to be honest with you. I was more comfortable going back into full, when I was wing back, I was more comfortable going back into full back than really back and helping out the full back and rather than going forward and helping the forwards really. I didn't really have a huge strike on myself either. Was when I was standing out, I could get the distance, but on the run, I wasn't like you see Tommy doing it or something like that. And they have a savage strike. Hoagie as well was brilliant at it, hitting on the run, but I never really had the distance or the accuracy really more than that, to be honest with you. So I was more comfortable going back into full back lane, giving a dig out and getting the ball up the field as quickly as we could, really.
All right, okay. So that makes a bit of sense, I suppose. But I said, even with the wind, some of the days and you're on the halfway line, you know, you should be thinking of taking a shot.
I didn't train in Woolley and it never went over. So I said, right, if I do that in the match, Brian Gordy would give me the curly finger now and take me off. But look, again, what was drilled into was the best man, the best position. It wasn't about individuals or anything like that. So I was getting the ball into the danger men, really, I suppose, especially if you knew Henry already was on top inside the full forward. What's the point in me taking a shot from 65, 70 yards out? Like, get the ball into them like, as much as possible, you know.
Yeah, so it's an incredible thing considering you weren't sure you'd make minor that you were brought straight into the seniors after your second year minor in 2001. And it wasn't like an impressive minor team. Like, you didn't even make the Leinster final in 2000.
No, awfully bad. We were the first team, minor team to lose within 10 years there. Tommy was on it, David Herty, Jackie, Taggy was on it as well. So, yeah, we're the black sheep of the Henny Hurling there for a while. But in a way, that summer kind of worked out great for me. A lot of people don't know this, but Gerard Henderson was a stalwart Fenians player and Kilkenny player, but he was a selector on the senior team at the time, and I was training with the club that summer when we got knocked out in the minor championship, and Gerard asked me to go in and train with the Kilkenny team coming up to the final as well, and actually was in playing corner forward there as well. So look, obviously I done a small bit then to kind of get Brian's attention really more than that for the coming year. And the next year then I was down in WIT in Waterford, and WIT played Kilkenny in a practice match there as well, and I was cornered back that particular night or that particular day, and it went well for me that day. So I'd say from going in the year before and just to tone the line and making up numbers with the senior team, and then playing that game against Kilkenny seniors. And I was actually brought in after league campaign, so I made my championship debut before I made my league debut, you know. So it's just, it's a couple of things kind of worked out in my favour, but I'd be forever grateful now to Gerard Henderson for giving me the opportunity to go in and train and kind of just give me the opportunity to train with these guys as well. It was huge at the time.
Wow, yeah, definitely. So who were you American as a young corner forward, which you're not? Who were you?
I was Johnny Butler. I used to have Johnny Butler there. He's from Great Ballycallan. He was tight cornerback, and every time he used to bump me hand, hand took off me straight away. You know, he'd be laughing away at himself. I didn't know what I was doing, really, to be honest with you, you know, but I was just happy to be in there, really, to be honest, you know. But it was funny. It's a great learning curve for myself just to see the likes of Willie O'Connor, and he was obviously a hero to me. Now I was kind of a back's instinct, and Willie O'Connor was the best back that I ever seen hurling on the telly or with Kenny either. And just to see him and how he trained really more than that, it kind of opened my eyes to a huge thing. Look, you're way away from this now at the moment, so you're going to have to get yourself head tuned in.
Right. So you think it was that Waterford IT game that really, as a cornerback, made you stand out, or did you have good performances with the minors?
No, I wouldn't say the overall impressive performance with the minors, to be honest with you. Probably Rocky, even man, didn't do a huge amount. I didn't do a huge amount either. But the big thing was that WIT game. I was on the panel that year after, and a few lads were saying to me, "Geez, you hurled well that particular day," and you kind of made me notice that you could actually hurl at this level. So that game went very, very well for me that particular day. But look. WIT, we were in our championship mode at that time. We had a lot of hurling, a lot of training under our belt at that particular stage. So probably the lads coming back from January and February there from Kenny probably didn't have a huge amount, which kind of suited me down to the ground as well. So I had a good bit done at that particular stage, and my touch was in, and I played well that particular day. So that kind of probably prompted Brian to give me the ring and call me into the senior setup.
Right, okay, because that's interesting, because like Henry, Tommy Walsh, you, Henry and Tommy Walsh for me were the three, you know, Hall of Famers on that Kilkenny team, and even Richie Hogan, like, you know, these fellas, none of them came straight in out of minors. It's just some kind of trajectory you went on from not thinking you'd make the minors to being the first one called in off it.
It's a huge thing, and I suppose, look, your timing is a huge thing as well, because Willie O'Connor retired that particular year, and there was a cornerback position up for grabs, and I'm presuming there was a lot less tried now in the league as well for Kilkenny. Like, I wasn't on the panel that particular time, but I only came in after the league, and I had probably 6 weeks to get ready for championship now. So that was very, very lucky. If Willie O'Connor had stayed on for another year, I wouldn't have started the cornerback. No way. You couldn't start a lad who was in for 6 weeks in front of a lad who was there for the last 10 or 12 years, you know. So look, I done okay and kind of broke even in the first game, so took off it for that. But look, at a huge learning curve in the semi-final against Galway as well, which I'll never forget.
Yeah, and so what's it like going into a dressing room then with DJ Carey, you know, Charlie Carter, all these fellas in 2001?
Yeah, it was huge. Like, I was up in watching the 99 All Ireland up in Craw Park and 2000 All Ireland as well. Like, you know, these are hurling heroes, really, more than that. And what's a brilliant thing for me now, Peter Barry used to live down just on a Waterford border as well. So anyone that's staying down in WIT or in college WIT, you always got lift back down with Peter as well. So I got to know him on a personal level as well. But I can't underestimate what he done for me as a player and a person as well. Like, you know, he just was the kind of standard bearer as well. I remember going back in the year before 2000, it was kind of Peter Barry was supposed to be injured, broken hand or broken arm, whatever it was. And I kind of whispered one last, I thought he was injured. Peter's never injured. He just wouldn't. The determination that guy has, it's just phenomenal. Like, you know, and just to kind of pick his brain on the way down the trips back down for training were brilliant for me. Not to be personally, it was brilliant for me.
Right. Okay. So he was like the leader of that dressing room at that time more than anybody else.
He was huge. Just a motivation factor. And he drove on training 100%. Now, by his own admission, he wasn't the best player on the panel, but he's the best attitude I ever seen from any individual player.
Right. Okay. And like, I mean, I suppose that rubs off on everybody else. Is he setting the tone then for that brilliant team that comes along?
Yeah, a lot of lads learn from him. I'd say Henry, if you talk to Henry, he'd learn a lot from him there as well. But yeah, look, them guys setting standards, DJ setting standards, John Power, these guys as well, they're huge players, Andy Comfort, and just to get to share the dressing with these lads, you can't not but learn off these guys as well. They've been proven winners, but they go out and kill each other out in the field, and but after then we all laughing and joking, it's all for the good of Kenny as well. So it was a huge learning curve for me, huge learning curve.
Within 3 years then you've got Player of the Year in 2003, which is unbelievable. And like, I don't know if were you nominated in 2004, because based off the semi-final and final performances, you were almost more deserving in 2004. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I was nominated in 2004, but Sean Oak had a fantastic year as well. Yeah. He had a great final too, you know. So, yeah, I was nominated for the top three for the 2004. I was kind of, not anxious going back into 2004 campaign, but you'd be worried because, you know, you have your standards here. You have to set from 2003 and you have to maintain that as well. But the top person we set now was kind of small, but better in 2004 as well. But it's just no complaint. Sean Ogle had a phenomenal year, like, and he had a brilliant campaign. So he was well-deserving on it. But personally, myself, I was happy just to be up in that reckoning again, just to be talked at that top three in going in line for the Player of the Year again, which was huge for me. But that was knowing that my standards weren't slipping, so it was a huge thing.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Kabir, I want to fast forward before we get Brian Cody on the line to your retirement. Like, I mean, my opinion is that you retired too young. You're just after winning an All-Star. You've won an All-Ireland. You could go on the following year and equal Henry's 10 All-Irelands, and you pulled the plug.
Yeah, look, I suppose it's kind of very easy to look at it that way at the moment. Going back, if you were to go back in 2015, you weren't guaranteed you were going to win the All-Ireland either. You know the kind of way. Yeah. So it's kind of rose-tinted glass here looking back at it. But no, after 2013, I'd had my wife Ashling there, and I was going to give it one more year. She actually went away to America for work, for just enhance her own career as well. So I was kind of said, right, I'll give it one year, and giving me all for that 2014 campaign. If I wasn't going to start, wasn't going to be on the 15, wasn't going to be 24, I was going to give me all and leave all my cards on the table. So realistically, if I went back in 2015, I would have been lying to myself. I just said, right, 2014, that was my lot. Mentally, I was finished after 2014 anyway. Right. Fair enough, the legs could have went, but I might have cost Kenny Ireland. You never know these things, but mentally, I was just done with the whole inter-county scene, really, more than that. And I was looking forward to going back to the club and trying to give them a few more years and trying to hurl away with them as well. But no, mentally, I was just finished with the whole inter-county kind of scene, really, more than that. But again, if I wasn't going to start on the 2004 Kilkenny team, I was going to enjoy every single minute of it. Every game that came, I was going to say, this could be my last game. Just enjoy it, embrace it. One great kind of advocate to me was with brother Damien as well, and he was brilliant to me, just mentally just getting my head right for the whole year in that campaign. Just enjoy it, just take it all in, and he made me kind of enjoy the year a lot more than probably I would have if he wasn't in my life at that particular time.
Right, okay. So if Aisling wasn't gone away to America, you might have finished after 2013, would you?
No, I was only I wasn't happy the way 2013 went. Nice. Fitness wise, touch wise, I wasn't where I should have been. And probably if you were really harsh on yourself and you look back, you can bluff everyone else, you can bluff your own teammates, you can bluff your manager, but you can't bluff yourself. And I kind of had a hard conversation with myself, said, look, I wasn't fit enough, I wasn't putting in enough gym work, and the touch wasn't right. So I was just going to rectify all the things I could rectify in my own game. And look, it was out of my control if Brian's going to pick me or not. That was completely up to him. But I was going to put myself in the best position for Brian to make sure that I give him no choice when he picked me, you know.
Right, okay, because you had the famous hook in 2014. I've heard some people saying that you would have looked upon that hook, even though it was so spectacular, that 5 years before you wouldn't have had to make that hook because you wouldn't have, that danger wouldn't have happened anyway.
I know, look, you can't say that now because the way the move went, Bubba's gave a lovely, lovely pass to Shamey. Shamey was gone. Obviously, they were obviously so telepathic that particular time and they were just getting a bit of space. But no, look, I couldn't guarantee I would have got the ball before Shamey that particular time because he got the run of me, simple as that. But there was a few occasions within the year like that. The ball didn't break our way, but during the year now, not just a Tipperary final or any of that, just during the year that I felt myself that if the ball had broke our way, I wouldn't have got there. You know what I can say? And I kind of had a few warnings, a few red flags in my own head that my standards were slipping and I wasn't really kind of happy with that either. But I was going to finish out the year no matter what. And if I got cleaned in the final, I would have finished anyway. You know what I mean? My mind was made up. And if I went back to 2015, I would have been back for completely the wrong reasons. I wouldn't have done the same amount I would have done in 2014. So again, I wouldn't have been the same player. I wouldn't have enjoyed it because I was bluffing myself going back for another year for completely the wrong reasons, you know. So, I was 2014, mentally, as I said, I was finished with the whole inter-county scene and I was just happy to finish up. Look, I couldn't have wrote it any better, to be honest with you. Winning an All-Star and winning the All-Ireland final, absolutely immense. And I was the last person to walk off the field after the replay as well, just because I just wanted to soak it, take it all in, that this is my last time walking off the field. And it was just such a sense of achievement just to walk off the field, the last man into the dressing room. No one knowing, only me, myself and Ashley knew what was going on. And it was brilliant just to walk off it, finish up the whole inter-county chapter like that.
Yeah, and like you were standing captain that day because Lester Ryan wasn't on the team. So you did all the enjoyable stuff. You led the team out as a captain. You led them in the parade. You know, you introduced them to the president and you didn't have to make the speech, which is kind of a bit of pressure.
That was brilliant. No, in fairness, a huge credit to the Clara Club that particular year. And I owe them an immense kind of credit for us. But they nominated me because Lester was, if Lester wasn't starting, they were nominating me for captain that year, and that was a huge kind of it was brilliant for me. I never got a chance to captain again as well, and I just want to kind of thank Clara for that as well. But that Leinster, our league final, I had a chat with Leicester before the game. We played Tipperary up in Semple Stadium, and Leicester was there out now captain. Look, fair enough, was captain leading out in the day, but he earned that right with Clara the year previously. They won the county championship, but I went over to Leicester in addressing before the game. So look, if we win today, you're going up to lift the cup, and it's going to be like that for the year, and that's it, because you're the captain, and you've had that right with Clara at the... You won the county final last year as well. So I think that took a bit of pressure off him as well. He didn't want to address it either, but it was only right that he went up because, again, he won the county champions last year by right. He should be the captain, and that was only right in my head, because if the other way around, I'd want to lift the cup because I won it with my club as well. But just, I kind of had to clarify that with Leicester before the Leinster Championship or before the league final, and he'd done that league final and there wasn't any questions after that. That was it. Leinster final, he went up, and All-Ireland final then, and he made a better speech than what I would have ever done anyway, because he'd done the All-Ireland as well.
Right, okay, fair enough. Right, we'll leave it there, JJ, because Brian Cody has joined us on the line now. Brian, we're talking there about the very nice gesture Clara made by nominating JJ as captain should Leicester not make the team.
Yeah, well, obviously in Kilkenny, the format is the county champions have the right to nominate a captain of the team, and as it turned out, Leicester was the captain, and if he weren't being picked for a particular game, then they'd nominate who they would have as captain, and JJ was the choice. It was a surprise to nobody, of course. I suppose every club in the county would have been thinking the same way, because you're looking for a natural leader, a natural player who would command respect of everybody, players, management, supporters, the whole place, and he was a top player, and it's only right, and it's great that he had that opportunity.
Yeah, like, I mean, is that rule a bit frustrating to you at times, Brian? The likes of JJ, you couldn't nominate the likes of JJ or, say, Tommy Walsh, you know, for captain.
Well, to be fair, no, I'm very, very happy with it, to be honest, because, I mean, the club scene in Kilkenny is huge, and if the club wins a county final, it's obviously in the case. I mean, if the Fenians won a county final in JJ's time, and JJ was, if somebody else were appointed as captain by team management, like, it would be a big blow to himself and the club. So, I mean, it's worked out very, very well for the county.
Right, okay. JJ was telling me there that he thinks the first time you noticed him was in a challenge game against WIT.
It's a long time ago since I started noticing JJ now. So I would have been, obviously, been aware of JJ. Like, I mean, I'd be aware of all the young players growing up, and his pedigree was fairly, fairly serious anyway. But I think really the standout time for me, he was always a player who was going to be coming through anyway. But I remember him playing a club match with the Fenians. I think it was out in Dixbury Pitch. I can't remember for certain who they were playing against, but he was 18, I suppose, 18, maybe had 19 at the time, but he just kind of stood out completely, you know. And I went home and I said that I'm going to ring that fellow now and see would he be interested in coming in. So that was really the memory I had of him for essentially making the first call, but it was going to happen anyway.
Right, and JJ, you were in the library in WIT when you got the call. You thought someone was messing.
Yeah, I was studying hard at the time. All right, now I wasn't in there too long, but yeah, look, again, I was probably, I wasn't on my radar at a bigger time. I didn't think I will be getting the call, you know, because I didn't get any league kind of games or anything like that. So yeah, but look, again, at the start I thought it was someone taking the piss out of me, all right, now, but then I kind of recognised Brian's voice there, and look, I was jumped at the chance. It was phenomenal, like, you know, it was brilliant. It was smiling face, packed the bags out of the library straight away.
Yeah, so you described him as the best defender you've ever seen, Brian. Like, I mean, that's some praise from somebody, you know, of your stature.
Yeah, well, I think I probably said I have never seen a better defender, because I'm always loath to say somebody is the greatest ever.
Right.
Because I can't say that. I mean, the greatest I've ever seen. See, obviously, some phenomenal defenders, like, you know, with ourselves and with all the other counties as well. But I would always claim that I've never seen a better defender than JJ. And I think it was fairly... the same opinion would have been there within our panel the whole time with all the players. Like, I mean, they would always rate JJ's just being way up there. I mean, for me, he just was the ultimate defender, because, I mean, you can talk about hurlers and players and attackers and defenders, but there's a phenomenal art of defending that maybe sometimes forgotten about completely, and players can stand out and play magnificent games, maybe do a few lovely things, maybe pop over a couple of pints even, but I mean, maybe they're not, the actual defensive part of their game is not as it should be. But JJ just guaranteed that every single time. His ability to defend was absolutely everything. He could. His anticipation was perfect. He had a brilliant hand, superb in the sky. Brilliant ability to stop players winning ball in the sky. His one of the things that probably stood out for him was if he weren't first to the ball, his ability just to get in a flick on the ball.
Yeah.
Touch to flick the ball away, to deny the man possession of the ball. I mean, every forward wants instant possession of the ball, but JJ had an uncanny ability to deny the forward instant possession of the ball, which gave him the advantage always. And he also had that kind of, I wouldn't say a mean streak, but I could have wanted, I suppose. He was totally, totally fearless, and he could play on whatever terms the game had to be played on. He was well capable of doing it.
JJ, there's one thing I always notice about you in all the clips where you're dispossessing fellas. Say they have managed the odd time to, you know, get the ball ahead of you, is when you're running after them, it doesn't never looks like you're panicking. You're just waiting for that ball to pop up off the hurl to flick it off it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Fair enough, it looks that way, but inside now we'll be panicking, or just get back to them as quickly as possible, because obviously no longer they have the ball, nor the closer they are getting to the goal too. But yeah, no, as Brian said, I just tried to deny the forward possession, and obviously if you get in their head now and on top in the first 10-15 minutes, that was always the thing I was trying to do, like, in regard to get into their head, and no matter where you turn, you're there for them, and they know that no matter, it's going to be a long day at the office then, that's what you're trying to do, you know. But yeah, no, look, it's a case of trying to get the ball back off them as quickly as possible, and obviously if you get the ball back, we're back in the attack again, like, you know what I mean? So it'll take the pressure off our backs at the time.
Yeah. What's the best game you ever saw him play, Brian? Or can you remember? I know there's been a lot of them. We're doing some show nostalgia shows. And in 2004, the Dan Shanahan, who's coming up on the show in a little while, that performance, and even Ben O'Connor in the final, he never gave him a look at it.
Yeah, you see, I mean, for me, it would be almost impossible to pick out a game that I think is the best he ever played, because there were so many. His consistency, I suppose, is what stands out completely, you know. That, I mean, could you pick out a bad game he played? You couldn't. I mean, yeah. I couldn't for certain, or even a mediocre one, if you like, you know. Even when, you know, at times when there were, the challenge was seriously put up to him, like, that happens to everybody. He was there, he was always unflinching, and always came out just really, really good. So he had top-notch performances on so many times. I mean, his level of awards testified to that and everything else. But again, it was just a constant guarantee that you had with JJ that going out in that pitch, he knew what he was going to do. But also that a huge part of his game, of course, also was the fact that he was totally conscious of the other defenders and the other players around him as well, that he was never just said, I look after my own patch. He just a complete ultimate defender for the team and for everybody else.
Right. Okay. The big talking point with JJ, Brian, is the switch to full back. So he's player of the year in 2003. He should probably have been player of the year in 2004. Like, I mean, I think it was 2005 you switched him there the first time when Hickey was injured.
Yeah, he thought he was slowing down, so he came to me and asked me to sit there for a while. No, look, I mean, we needed a full back and I was injured, and straight away, I mean, in my head it told me it had to be JJ. You know, was he the best wing back? Was he the best player we wanted to play at left half? Of course he was. And did we want to take him out of it? No. But I mean, defending is defending, like, you know, and the reality of the game is the real defenders could play all six positions, and JJ has done that so many times for club and county, played all the various six positions at his ease almost. So a fullback being a huge, hugely important position, who else would you go for except JJ?
What did you think, JJ, when you were asked? Like, I know you'll say you'd play anywhere for Kilkenny, but like, I mean, you're going so well out on the wing. Would you even be a part of you saying that, oh, Jesus, Brian, leave me out there?
I would be brave enough to say that to Brian. To be honest with you. But, no, so I was fortunate enough because with the club, I was playing full back there for them few years anyway. So it wasn't really an alien position to me because PJ Delaney would have been on the panel, in Kilkenny panel at the time, and he's the same club. So he was always centre back, you know. So I was playing full back, so it wasn't like the big move that everyone thinks it was, because every club game I was playing full back anyway, you know, so it was kind of fairly enough. Look, I go anywhere, I had no issues there whatsoever. Look, I would have preferred 700%, but give me the number 3 jersey, I'd take with both hands as well. But again, just to clarify the mind, it wasn't a big move because I was playing number 3 with the club for a few years anyway, so it wasn't a big move for me, to be honest.
Right, okay. And Brian, in 2006 then, he was obviously injured. He did his cruciate, and that's when you said you hadn't seen a better defender. Now, was that a bit of mind games to take the pressure off your team, or were you feeling sorry for JJ at the time?
Oh, look, it was cruel what happened, JJ. I mean, the fact that he was going to miss the All-Ireland final, I've got absolutely total sympathy for him. But I mean, it was a question of, you know, it happens to players on a regular basis. Injury happens, and we didn't tend to kind of dwell on it, nor JJ didn't either. You know, he carried on. But I mean, I was really telling the truth. We were just, after losing a player, I had never seen a better player than him and a better defender than him. So that's the kind of quality of player we were losing. But, you know, at the end of the day, we just get on with it and somebody takes his place, and that's the way he would have been there driving the thing on as well.
I was reading, JJ, I think it was on your Laker Gale, you were saying that was a huge one to miss, because a lot of your Kilkenny teammates say that was one of their big All-Ireland memories, is stopping that 3 in a row for Cork.
Yeah, it was a huge thing because I had to go over the field that particular day. Cork were the running team, and everyone thought they couldn't be stopped. And at the performance they put in, why wouldn't you not want to be a part of that, you know? And it was frustrating sitting in the line looking at it, but I was so happy that they did win it. And yeah, they referenced it for a couple of years after as well. But yeah, it was just some part of me that always wanted to be a part of that performance because it was so complete. It's just pure hunger, work rate, savagery, and the will not to be bet on that particular day was huge from the 1-15 and a few guys that came on. Just felt on the bus coming up to the match. It was just the management, the physios, the players were all on the same hymn sheet. And yeah, it was just unfortunate not to be a part of it. But again, I was just so happy for the lads to do it on the field as well. It was just a bit of jealousy on my part, really, not to be part of it, that's all.
Ah, yeah, well, that's only natural. Brian, I'm slagging him about only scoring 1 point in 66 performances. What's your thoughts on that?
To be honest, I'm surprised he scored 1 point.
That's a good friend as well, Brian.
No, it wouldn't have been. JJ wasn't one of these flamboyant players. I mean, that's probably what made him so outstanding. He wasn't flamboyant. He was totally efficient. It was never a question of thinking about, I'll do something magical, I'll do something that. His main priority at all times, like he's more or less said, was he was to defend. He was a defender, deny the man possession, win the ball, get it back, get the team on the attack. And that's the player he was, and I can't remember that point even. I'd love to have a think about games.
He was telling us here that it was against Offaly in a Moor Park, and if there was a Hawkeye in a Moor Park, he might not really even have gotten that point.
it was probably a Welsh Cup game, I'd imagine, if there was no pressure.
I know, a championship game, worry, so
perfect, yeah.
We were in trouble at the time.
I can imagine, yeah, a rally and score.
That's one thing I was wondering, because we know Tommy Walsh could score a lot from wing forward and he played midfield, but when he went back wing back, he didn't, you know, shoot as much, Brian. Is that the way you just want your defenders to defend and get it up to the forwards who score?
No, I mean, I think it's a question of the kind of player they are. I mean, I would never, I would always want a player to go out and just be the player they are. They're picked because they can do the particular job they're needed to do. And some players have that, you know, that attacking kind of style if the opportunity arises. It wasn't JJ's style. Again, I'm not sure what Tommy did from wing back to the point of view of scoring, but I would certainly be more interested in making sure that the player did more defending than scoring at points.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. What was JJ like in the dressing room? I was reading that he had a few words in the 2012 final. Is that right?
So it means I was afraid he might fall asleep in the dressing room because JJ in the, JJ in the dressing room was totally relaxed almost. You know, you had to Croke Park, we'll think of Croke Park because there's an area there where you go in and beat the ball against the wall and such like, and a lot of players do that. But JJ tended to sit down in the dressing room, look through the programme, be very, very quiet while everybody was walking around doing things. And then most fellas might be even half talked out and JJ might get up and start getting changed. But then when the action was ready to start, he wasn't a massive talker, to be fair about it, but whenever he did speak, it was worth hearing and it was something that players took in very, very much. So he wasn't the big, massive driver talker, because he was hugely concentrating on his own performance. And that probably stood to him massively, because you could see him in his head just thinking and preparing, because that's the most important thing for every player come match day, to make sure you go and ready to go yourself. But his contributions in team meetings or match days or dressing rooms were short but crucial.
Is that fair enough, Jason?
I'll go with you, yeah, 100%. I wouldn't be wanting to get in now and kind of get the whole thing going. But you'd have a conversation with the guys that if you're full back, the two cornerbacks and the wing and the half back line in front, you just to make sure everyone knows their job really more than that. And that's probably more what I'd rather do, and just to make sure that everyone knew their own particular job. And when we go out there, if I'm covering and then you cover me, you know, the kind of way. So I'd rather have one-on-one conversation than a big rousing speech, really. It wasn't really, if I tried to do that now, I'd say lads would start laughing at me because it just wasn't in character, you know, the kind of way. So it's just a rather one-on-ones.
Well, I'm picturing you being so relaxed in Croke Park reading the programme, maybe with your legs crossed like this is just a Welsh Cup game while everyone else is getting rubs and kind of psyching themselves up.
It's still a hurling match at the end of the day. Like, you have to go out there and hurl, that's all. Like, you wouldn't want to worry about what crowd is out there at all.
You probably sitting beside Cha Fitz, because he struck me as a fella who would take it all in his stride as well.
Yeah, I wasn't sitting too far away. You saw I'll ever kind of sit, kind of seating areas, you know, wouldn't be too far away from Cha right now, to be fair. But I always try to get talked out before Cha, right?
Here, what about the fight with Lar Corbett in Nolan Park, Brian? Like, I mean, I slag him on the show here about punching Lar Corbett's helmet. Like, it made no sense punching a face guard. Was that the first time you ever saw him doing that?
JJ was very, very, he always shunned away from any kind of physicality like that. He would be, especially, I mean, coming from Johnstown, the Phoenix club, they wouldn't be known for any kind of physical play like that. You know?
We'd be harmless out there, Brian.
You would, JJ, for sure, yeah.
Everyone sees JJ as like an angel on the field, but Damien Hayes kind of painted a different picture of him, and you're kind of alluding to a different picture. He was able to hide it well then, obviously, to the general public.
I don't know what Damien said about him, to be honest, around like that, but I mean, JJ Delaney was just, I mean, there was no stupidity, no dirt involved or anything that at all. It's a question of doing the job that he had to do. And I mean, it's a physical game, and he was well able to do all that part of it. But I mean, that's everything. I mean, a back who goes out stupidly fouling and all that kind of stuff is a fool, like, you know. So I mean, JJ wasn't a player who was not ever getting blown around like that. But he was able to defend in every aspect of the game that was required, and that's as he was.
What were you thinking in late 2014 when you saw his name popping up on your phone and he was ringing you to break that news to you?
Well, he didn't have to break the news because once I saw JJ ringing me, he wasn't wishing me a happy Christmas. Or seeing how I was when my daughter was saying, Brian, I'm hoping everything's okay with you. You know, that wasn't JJ. So I knew exactly the message that was coming.
Right, okay. And did you try to talk him around, or were you surprised by it after the year he had?
I wasn't shocked, to be honest, you know. It had crossed my mind that he might, and I just don't know why, to be honest about it. But when I saw it was, I said, oh, here we go, JJ's telling me the story now. I would have said, I mean, I would always say to players, look, good, it's your call. I'm not going to try and convince anybody. I'm pretty sure I said to JJ, there's probably more in you, JJ, but it's your call. Yeah, you decide. If your mind is made up, I'm not going to try and convince you. But if you want my opinion, I would imagine there's more there, but I'm not absolutely not going to try and change your mind.
I think there's a great line, JJ. It's from Mick Roach, who played with Tip, as you know. He said, it's better to be asking someone why they went rather than why they didn't.
Yeah, yes, sure. But it was the decision was made at the start of the year, really. And again, we couldn't explain it previously, but I didn't want to backtrack on my own decision. I'd be going back for the wrong reasons. And I'm thinking I would have been taking up a position on the Kilkenny panel that someone else would rather have, you know, the kind of way. So it just meant, you know, we had was finished with the whole inter-county scene and decision better. And even I wouldn't want to ring and make a phone call to Brian. I didn't expect him to try and you have to be fully 100% committed, because if you're going to ring and Brian to ask him to change your mind, look, that's not going to happen. He's going to take your own decision. So look, it was just decision was probably the hard phone call to make, to be fair. It was had your name up a few times before after you pressed the call button. All right, now to be fair, but yeah, it was just look at an end of an era, really. That's the hardest part. That was the hardest part of making that call, really.
Well, that was it. It was in your head for the whole year, JJ. But then the call to Brian was the final kind of act. So I presume you were nervous. You're cancelling a few calls.
You just look, there's no going back. If you make that call, that decision is in your head for the year. But once you make that call, that's it. It's final, you know. So look, it wasn't easy call to make. But again, just kind of had to be done, really.
It's some medal haul, a whole load of them have, Brian, isn't it? You know, between All-Irelands, like 9 All-Irelands, you know, then 6 All-Stars, a Player of the Year, and then you've Henry with 10. Like, I mean, I don't know if it'll ever be seen again.
It's phenomenal, really, I suppose, you think about it like that, you know, and it's just a testament to the quality of players they were and what they achieved. They didn't achieve it easily. I mean, they worked massively hard for it. And it wasn't a question of it coming easy all the time. We had some great wins, but some of the matches we won, some of the finals we won, they were just phenomenal challenges, like, and to stick with it and to keep going and to keep coming back year after year. But I mean, it's they love doing it. They love playing it. They love playing the game. And I mean, people always talk about the pressures and all the rest of it, but I mean, it's not a pressure coming training with your county. It's not a pressure going out playing those matches with your county. And that's just the kind of players they were. They never made a big deal about it. They never looked for this or looked for that. They love doing what they're doing, and that's the reason why they reap such rewards.
But is that down to you, Brian? Because, like, I mean, I know they're all self-driven, but how can you have lads like JJ and Henry, who are all-time greats, but they have no egos?
Well, I mean, it's you can't put into somebody who's not kind of half more or less there anyway, you know. And I mean, they are the fellas they are. People bring their personalities with them, they bring their characters with them, and they just get together as a group then and they get on with it and they see the opportunities that are there. And obviously it goes part and parcel with the ambition they have as well. I mean, they can be ambitious to be somebody special or somebody with a huge profile, or they can be ambitious to be somebody who will go out and just do real things and get the rewards for that. And that's the kind of players they were.
Yeah, it definitely was. Brian, thanks very much for joining the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Sounds good. Take care. All the best.
Thanks.
Great stuff from Brian there, JJ. He was in good form there. I think you bring out the kind of cuddly side of Brian Cody.
I don't know what I'd say. He's just missing the hurling at the moment now. So you see, he just chat away all day about it, you know. But no, he's in great form. He was a great kind of mentor to myself as well. But he's kind of he doesn't give himself full of credit either, because he clipped our wings there when we were younger as well on a couple of occasions too. You know what I mean? Just keep your ego in check now and all that kind of stuff as well. So look, only for him. He's captain of the ship. He was piping where the ship was going. You know what I mean? So he didn't mind who was on it. As long as anyone was on it, they're all going the right direction too, you know?
Yeah, because I know it's not probably part of your personalities, but at the same time, if you have a weak manager, that could, you know, and everything that you've won, egos can develop. It's only natural.
Oh, it is, yeah. Especially if you win a couple of things there as well. Like, you know what I mean? And what comes with that then too, you know, you have to and learn how to deal with that then as well, like, you know. But no better man to kind of bring everyone back down to earth. And when the January came again, and he'll point out a couple of things that you did wrong and the year previously, you know, like, and what you have to work on too, you know, because complete hurler is never born, you know. He can always improve on something, so he always used to pick something, and look, 9 times out of 10 he was all right.
Yeah, come here, I want to talk to you about fielding. Like, I mean, do you think that was the strongest part of your game?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Look, it's a huge advantage because you win that ball, it just demoralises your opponent there as well. Like, you know, when you get the ball caught off you too, it's not a nice feeling. But look, you want to win the ball back for your own team and you can dictate where a player's going to go there as well. And, you know, it's a huge thing all right now. It's kind of, I like the individual one-on-one battles there as well, that it's you or him that's going to win it. So it's whoever wants it more, really.
Right. And did it ever get to the stage where goalkeepers are actually avoiding your wing, you know, to keep it away from you in the air?
Well, Kilkenny, where do you poke it? Do you poke it down on Tommy or do you poke it down on Brian Hogan? You know, the kind of way. But every All Ireland final, it's funny when you look back, is any opposition team used to start trying, first game the ball turn in, someone just tried to start a fight with Tommy Welsh. Then the puck will come down on top of him. He'd always get the first one. Then I'd always get the second one there as well. So we knew if we win the first couple there and get the ball down the field, the keeper will wonder where he's going to puck it after that. You know, the kind of way. So it's a huge thing for us to kind of focus in on the first 5 minutes that we do win the couple of pucks coming down first. And then you have the keeper scratching their head straight away, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Nicky English has a great quote there I was reading, and he says, what stays with me is how his arm could seemingly grow at times. Just when it looked like someone was about to outreach him or the ball was going to pass over him, his hand would appear to extend a few inches and he'd come down with the ball. I said, oh no, have you got some sort of robotic arm or some sort of what Nicky was seeing?
I'd say it was just, I never really caught the ball in front of my face, for argument's sake. I used to always kiss the ball at the back of my head, you know, I let the ball pass my opponent and actually catch it
right
at the back, for argument's sake. So that was what probably Nicky would probably talk about really, Anton, because you have the ball falling into your hand rather than your hand the ball can hit in your hand directly on. So it's actually falling into your hand really more. All you do is just kind of clear the path to let that ball go back into your hand again. I suppose that's what he is talking about, right? But
you wouldn't really be looking at the ball at that stage then, would you? You'd be more sensing where it is.
You'd be sensing where it is, yeah. Yeah, but look, a lot of times though the ball would hit your hand and fall down, but I never minded that, because if the ball hits your hand and falls down, at least you know it's on the ground, whereas your opponent doesn't know where the ball is actually gone because he never got a touch on it.
All right.
So you'll have an advantage. If the ball hits that ground, when it hits your hand, it's going to fall a yard, a radius around where you're standing anyway. So yeah. get over the ball and go on and win it again. So I never really minded. Once I got the hand to the ball, I was never really too bothered did I either catch it fully or actually fell to the ground. Either way, I was happy enough I knew where the ball was, you know.
Right. Okay, right. We'll leave it there, JJ, because Dan Shanahan joins us on the line now. Dan, how's it going?
Well, thanks. Well, thank you, mate.
We're doing a tribute show to JJ Delaney, and we've just been talking about how he can fetch a ball out of the sky. Something you might know a thing or two about yourself.
You guarantee I do. unbelievable. Like, you know, I wouldn't say he was ever a small man, but, you know, whatever it is, don't ever kick any hurlers, especially JJ, the way they fetch the ball over the head. I was 6'3". I suppose in my 20s, I was 6'4". But, you know what I mean? But, again, the timing from JJ was unbelievable, and the Kilkenny backs, like, you know, it's just like, you know, just they were all saying, why wouldn't a 6'4" man catch a ball over 5'9", 5'10"? Do you know? And do you know, it's just unbelievable. You could have all the training you want, but JJ's timing was unreal in the air, like, you know. And if he didn't catch it, then you were guaranteed. I wasn't going to catch it, like, you know.
Right, okay. And like, I mean, the 2004 match is the one that stands out for me, because we all watched the 2004 Munster final recently on the television, and you destroyed John Gardner in the first half, in the air, the whole lot. Like, I mean, and then you come up against DJ, like you or against JJ, like you said, and he's 5 inches shorter than you. And, you know, it's just, you think it's down to his timing or that he's a lefty?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's, like, you know, I suppose if be honest, the back has probably the advantage facing the ball, the forward coming from behind, but the forward is trying to get the timing right, like, you know, so the back has that extra split second to maybe decide when he can go with the forward, like, you know. But JJ's timing was unbelievable, Colin, just for second to none, like, you know. And I always seem to get the raw end of the stick, like, you know, that JJ always tends to number 10 side, like, you know. So Brian Hogan, but if I got one of them, it'd be just as good, like, you know, as well, like, you know. But I couldn't speak highly enough of JJ, the hunger he had for the game after winning 9 All Ireland, and to still come out and want to win again, like, you know. But again, I thought he was excellent all round hurler, not only in the air but on the ground as well. His delivery of the ball and his hunger to win was second to none.
What are you thinking, JJ, in 2004 after seeing Dan's performance in the Munster final and knowing how big he is? Like, I mean, I know you're telling us here that your tactics were to kind of stand behind, but that's a big risk with someone like Dan.
Yes, look, if you stand directly behind Dan, she's 6'4", you're not going to see where the ball is going to come. So I kind of had to get take a couple of steps back and then take a run and jump at him, really, more than that, because I wouldn't even see the ball around Dan, because physically very imposing, very, very strong. And if I start wrestling with Dan would win that every day of the week, you know, that kind of way. But I was very conscious that I'd have to go stick with Dan, because he had a phenomenal Munster championship that year and scored 6 goals from wing forward as well. So he's obviously getting in goal scoring opportunities there as well. So he was drifting in for the wing, and I was very, very conscious going into the game that I couldn't let him go. Like, you know what I mean? If it broke my eye off Dan for 1 second, he'd be in the full forward line, you know, that kind of way. So I had to track him wherever he went, really, more than that, and kind of done a kind of a bit of a man marking job. I noticed anyone else on him, because he was so dangerous that year. He was absolutely phenomenal. Like, and looking back at that, the Cork and Waterford game, and he was just everywhere, you know. And I was conscious going into the game that, right, no matter where he goes, I'm going to have to follow him. I can't let him go, because he's always in the right place at the right time, and that's not a coincidence. So I'm going to have to be there with him, you know. So that was my thinking going into the game.
Right. And what were you thinking watching those classic Munster matches? Because, like, at the time, you weren't having classic Leinster finals or anything like that. You know what I mean? It was all about the Munster Championship.
Yeah, it was. It's huge. Look, them Cork and Waterford games, look, you only have to be a hurling supporter to appreciate them. And I'm actually delighted they've seen them over the last couple of weeks there as well. And they're absolutely phenomenal games. You know, the two teams going at it toe-to-toe, no quarter rest are given either. And there's a few individual performances in the different games. Different players stood up in every game that they played against each other as well. And they started to hide the respect for each other. But there's two teams that you couldn't put money on whichever team is going to come out on top. But a phenomenal final. I used to love watching them games, to be honest. I was jealous that you wouldn't be actually involved in them games, you know. But especially in Thurles as well, seeing it added to the whole thing too, you know. But phenomenal performance by both sets of players.
Yeah. When you think about it, Dan, like, I mean, there's the 2004 match, there's the 2008 final, which you didn't get going, and you beat them in a league final. Was the 2004 match, you know, conceding the goals like that, is that one you'd kind of remember as one that you had a chance of winning?
Yeah, you would. We just didn't play well going back as a team, to be honest with you. In the Munster Championship, we were playing well. But JJ, he said something there. A lot of us just play sometimes individually. Now, do you know what I mean? One fella played well one day, another fella. But we never seemed to kick my four or five of our forwards on any given day. Like, you know, right. That was a big team, I suppose, that we didn't get over the line. That we seemed to play well in four, two or three of us, but six of us never seemed to click, like, you know, on big days that... we get over the likes of Kilkenny and other big teams in above and Cove Park, like, you know. And in the Munster Championship is great, I suppose. Cork and Waterford over the years would have had a massive rivalry in Thurles, like, you know. But Cork, whatever it is above them, could go on and beat Kilkenny, but Waterford struggled. Do you know what I'm saying to you? Like, you know, and that was maybe a factor. I remember the games we used to play against Kilkenny in the league final. I suppose when you get to the league final and they tell you want to win it. And I think we got lucky breaks that day. We were that bit fitter. It was winter hurling as well, a bit heavy on the ground, I think. Glad when he come back as well. So we were really up for that game. But again, like, you know, as the year goes on, like, you know, I can assure you Brian Cody and JJ Kelly and Savage, he didn't want the ball for beating Kilkenny twice in 1 year, like, you know. And, you know, but it's again, for me, we just didn't play well as a team on the big days against Kilkenny. Like, when myself and Finn and Milan and Kelly would come together and shine all in the one day, it didn't happen for us, like, you know.
Was that something that she would have been aware of, JJ, that, you know, block out their kind of, you know, strike forwards, and it's not like their link-up play necessarily is great, they're just brilliant individually?
Yeah, look, you're conscious of the six forwards that they had, and we were just hoping they wouldn't click. It's what Dan was saying, we were hoping going into the game against them that they hoping that four or five wouldn't click the same day, because they did, they'd blow anyone out of the water. And that was kind of the same, right? Each individual battle, we're trying to get on top of our guy. And hopefully now the lad next door is going to do the same thing to the Waterford forward as well. Like, you know, so, yeah, we're hugely conscious of the ability they have. It was unbelievable. Like, you know, like, in a way, and if you were the greatest hurlers to never win in Ireland, then I think it's a... Because, again, if we didn't win it, we wanted them to win it too. You know, that kind of way, because it was... I know it's the comfort or not, but it's everyone's second favourite team. When your own team got knocked out, you wanted the Waterford to go on to win it, you know. So it's we're very aware of what the ability they had, like, you know, but we're just kind of individually, we had to kind of get on top of each individual positions. That's what we're trying to do.
Just one other quote, Dan, that I'm after passing over, is you said JJ Delaney was another great man to field the ball either side of his man. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, JJ could do it anyway. Like, you know, I had a habit, and JJ knows, I'm playing the hurley, and I was actually very good at it, actually. But when the back had come past me, and I played the hurl, Cullum, and I'd be gone inside him straight away, like, you know. And I think he told me he could do both, like, you know. He knew he couldn't give me, stay to my right, if you know what I'm saying, because I could play it hurley. But it's so hard sometimes to mark a different lad that's holding the hurley the opposite way. Like, you know, it's coming from a different angle. But the lads I would have been marking were coming with my same goal as myself. Like, JJ was kind of a kidog coming across that way, like, you know. But again, you know, it's you know, as JJ said something there, Cullum, that my movement that day maybe wasn't up, that I didn't bring JJ around the field enough, bring him out towards midfield. And that day, I think I caught one ball, and one pitcher stands out a mile where Noel Hickey and JJ were on top of me back, like, you know, that's the way it continues. I said, I looked at the pitcher later, and I just said to him, there's no way I could catch the ball. Noel Hickey and JJ on me back. I said, oh, how the hell could you catch it?
It was a free out time, right?
I thought, like, this, don't JJ, this was a free out, but I got nothing that day. But again, no, I think that day in 0-4, like, Flinnock got 12 or 13 points, and Jack Kennedy came out and got 3. And yeah. Like, myself and Owen Kelly and a few of the bigger lads, Milan didn't play well that day. Like, you know, and to beat Kilkenny, you have to, we, especially Waterford, nowadays even, we have to have 20 players playing well. You know, and if you don't have 20 players playing well, like, you know, Kilkenny can win games, maybe 10 players playing well. But for Waterford to win them against Kilkenny, you have to have your whole panel playing well to beat them, like, you know.
Is that kind of a feature of playing against Kilkenny, Dan, is with their backs, that there was always a second lad to help out? JJ explains to us on the show about defending as a group, you know, and coming across if it's on one side, you know, and different things like that. That if you went past one fella, there was always a covering fella.
100%. Rarely did I catch a ball off JJ, and if I was going to pass, Moises Finley was on top of me, or Owen Larkin was down that wing, getting near me as well. Like, you know, I was watching there. I would have studied a lot with Derek in the management side of it. And we would have looked back at Kilkenny games where Walter Wilson was back in the half back line in some of the games clearing ball. Like, you know, he was named in the half hour day. You know, he was back centre back clearing the ball. So their work ethic was unbelievable. Like, you know, I don't know, was it tactical or was it just, I just think personally, because all their work ethic, wanting to get the ball and to use it, because they had serious forwards when they won the ball and back at the back. They had serious forwards to trouble up front. Like.
Yeah, no, there was. Come here, you liked a little bit of friendly trash talk, as we know, Dan, on the field. Any kind of guff out of JJ and yourself, no?
No guff. I was lucky. I went to Singapore with JJ. I think it was Singapore in the autumn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I say nothing, JJ, but no, we had a great crack. No, we had a great crack, boy, and last year I was lucky enough, and he got me changed. He got into Copper, and he got me in. Like, I wouldn't let me in. Next night he came along and got me in there. So I was delighted to see it. But again, I can't say, like, you know, I ever got the better of JJ, but again, like, you know, I always enjoy playing him, like, you know, because you're Mac and mine, the best defenders in the country.
Did any of those Kilkenny defenders like a bit of trash talk?
Not really, to be honest with you, Colm. I never had any, like, you know, if I passed JJ or Jackie Turr, like, you know, I'm behind him. And, you know, if you passed him, you'd know Leakey coming to you. You know, he was serious, serious. Tommy was just a winner. Like, Tommy Wilson, I was reading something when Henry said there later, he wanted to play every game. Like, you know, he was so enthusiastic to play every game. He wanted to win every game. Like, you know, look, and you must give the lads credit. I didn't buy it down there. That JJ has 9 or 11 medals, I think. And, you know, to have the hunger to keep coming back every year, he's phenomenal, like, you know. And the way he slipped from wing back to full back, like, you know, and that massive hook on Seamus Callanan, I think, you know, that's just, it's unbelievable for him, like, you know.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt it absolutely was. Dan, thanks very much for joining the call.
Thanks, Dan.
I don't know what I see this year in Copper. I don't think I've
seen you never know, man.
Who knows the 21 this guy. Thanks, Dan. Thanks very much, boy.
See you then.
Great stuff from Dan there, JJ. I cannot believe that Dan couldn't get into Coppers, which, geez, Coppers are letting their standards slip if Dan Shanahan can't get in there.
There was a bad form. I couldn't believe when I seen him outside. He said, come on, we're going in here now. Or if you're not going in, none of us are going in. So, he came in. I know he got in, and he had a good night after it.
Well, like, I guarantee you Cottle Jackson was not on the door if Dan
Shanahan
wasn't. No,
he wasn't. No, he wasn't, to be fair.
Makes a little bit of sense. Come here, JJ. This is the end of the tribute show. I have 10 questions to ask you. And we'll run through these rapid fire. and see how we get on. Right, so question one. If you weren't playing for Kilkenny, what county would you like to play for?
Probably have to go again, sort of said it, Dan, second favourite team, Waterford there, 2002, 2008, to the characters around that team. Was unbelievable, a great crack after the games today. But not only that, the players they had, Ken McGrath, Tony Brown, all these are absolutely phenomenal. John Milan, phenomenal hurlers as well. So I'd like to be involved in a team like that now, yeah.
Right, okay. Your worst ever game?
Probably Galway 2007. Alan Kearns got 4 points after me. He was took off the quarter final. We were playing Wexford in semi final probably a week after, very, very close to it. And I was kind of anxious enough looking at the team sheet when it was coming up, to be honest with you. I didn't know I was going to get the starting semi final, but lucky enough I did.
Really? And that's the year coming back after your cruciate?
Yeah, well, it was 2007. Yeah.
Right, okay. Most difficult opponent?
Most difficult opponent. Probably Ken McGrath from Waterford and Owen Kelly from Tipperary. Two different players, but physically the two of them brought to the table. Ken McGrath was brilliant in the air. And Owen Kelly, if you didn't get the ball for Owen Kelly, you weren't going to get the ball, simple as that.
Yeah, you're absolutely gone. Okay, number four. If you could sign one player for Kilkenny during your time with them, who would it be?
Again, Ken McGrath. One of my favourite hurlers ever seen. He could do it all, the backs, the forwards, midfielder, anywhere. He was just a natural player and he was a leader as well. And a brilliant, brilliant hurler. I'd like to love to play with Ken McGrath.
Okay, great stuff. Number five, your favourite position or your best position?
Favourite position, probably wing back number seven. Probably never hit that. You're involved in the game all the time there as well. And if you want to go attack, you can attack. You have that bit of freedom rather than fullback, you know. And I just like to be involved in the game, especially puckouts as well.
Yeah.
You're involved in the game a lot more. So, yeah, definitely number seven.
Okay, number six, the hardest stroke, dirtiest player you've marked. And I mean dirtiest in the nicest possible way.
Yeah. Probably two that stands out now was Henry Shefflin in training, Kenny, and Owen Kelly then for Tipperary. Two of them would just fight tooth and nail for the ball. Didn't mind if you wanted to go dirty with them, they'd do it. If you want to hurl, they'd hurl as well. But that's why they're so good. They never took anything lying down either, to be fair to them. You know, they could give it and dish it out and take it. But no, definitely to them. Henry for Kilkenny strain and then Owen Kelly for Tipperary as well.
Jesus, I can't believe that. Like, they're the two best players I could think of. I wasn't thinking the hardest players.
Yeah, but again, like, you have to be, if you want to be up at that kind of level, You're not going to be pushed around. You're not going to win. And then players are mentally strong as well, and they're not going to let you let a back come around and push them around the place. They'll stand up for themselves as well. And physically strong men as well. And Owen Kelly's big, massive legs on him. You couldn't move him at all, you know, the kind of way. So it's not two phenomenal players.
Okay, question number seven. The best advice Brian Cody ever gave you?
Just kind of go over and go out and take over the field. That's what he always used to say before the games. You're not restricted to, and he alluded in the conversation, well, you're not restricted to number seven. If go give your teammates a dig out whenever you can there as well. And he said, if you're clearing the ball in the number two position or number five position, you're actually getting involved in the play and you're actually playing well. So don't be just pigeonhole yourself just at number seven. Get around the field and do what's best for the team.
Okay, number eight, the Tipperary player you most admired from 2009 to 2014.
Like, I suppose taking Owen out of the situation, probably Paddy Maher, left-hander hurler as well, and he's dominating games for the last few years. Probably most influential Tip player over definitely the last 10 years. Brilliant, brilliant player, brilliant in the air. Can go up the field and score as well, to be fair to him. So, no, very, very good player.
All right, okay. Number nine, what other manager would you like to have played under?
I suppose brother Damien was a huge influence my second half of my career. He was involved in the minor teams. I was obviously overage for a few of them, but he would be one manager that I would love to be playing under. But off the field, even when he wasn't involved in any teams I was in, huge influence my career. I probably dedicate the second half of my career to brother Damien as well, because only for him I probably wouldn't have done what I would have done in the second half of the career, because he just kind of mentally kind of got me in a good state of mind, kind of reminded me of what was important, reminded me how to go back and enjoy and play in the game as well, which was a huge thing. That was probably 2008, 2009. I know we're winning a couple of Irons, but I was just going through the motions, really. And his direction now, kind of definitely the second half of my career, only for him, I wouldn't have been staying until 2014, I'd say.
All right, very interesting. And last one, number 10, where do you keep your medals and your All-Stars?
medals, I don't know where they are, to be honest with you. I don't think it's any different. And they all serve around me mantelpiece at home, because
all of them.
When I go in home, I can see him there as well. Like, you know, that's the only reason I know they're there. But the medals, I don't know where they are, to be honest.
So you have your player of the year in the middle and then three all-stars on either side of the player of the year. Is that right? Is that the formation?
I don't know the formation. I'll check him next time I'm at home. I'll check him out.
JJ, thanks very much. You have the first tribute show, and it was a great one. And I suppose from everybody listening and from myself, congratulations on an absolutely brilliant career. It's been a great start to our new tribute series.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you later when we're not allowed.